Today on Seculo, China's new dictator for life.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
And welcome to Seculo. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. At a high-level meeting of China's Communist Party yesterday, they have declared President Xi Jinping the undisputed rule of, quote, decisive significance for the nation, affirming his grip as he prepares for yet another term that would at least extend his command of China until 2027. To put in the historical significance of this move, there have only been two people in China's history as the Communist Party has led China who have been elevated to this position, basically dictator for life, leader for life. You have Mao, and then Deng Xiaoping, who brought kind of a new economic revolution to China post-Mao. That's it. So with Xi Jinping being moved to this position, to this level of leader, it also is a message to the world. This is who you're going to be dealing with, not just for the near term, but for the long term. And we have historically placed him in this role. We talked about those reports, how he hasn't been really leaving China and he's been maintaining his place in China. I think this actually speaks to that. It's not a power move within that he's worried about. It's that he has become the leader you have to go visit. You have to go to him. You have to come to China. And there's this talk, you know, the Biden administration, and it was Jake Sullivan, we don't want to contain China. We don't want to, we're not trying to contain them. We're not trying to start a Cold War. Of course, you don't really pick and choose those moments. But to get into that, the idea that we've given up on trying to contain an adversary for economic purposes only. I mean, that's really the only reason you would make these decisions. And where they're going is on a path not necessarily to nuclear war with the United States, but it's similar to what I think on a much larger scale, he's doing what Putin did, but in a bigger scale because China's much more powerful and advanced with a much stronger economy for the government. So with Putin putting himself in power basically for life, now you have the Chinese leader in power for life. What do they start taking? Well, what did they start doing, and what did Russia start doing? They annexed part of Ukraine, and now they're looking at potentially another land invasion. Wes, I see China. You think about Taiwan immediately.
Sure.
As when they get this kind of power, and the rest of the world just says, we don't mess with us, really. Yeah. Which, by the way, they do mess with us all the time with intellectual property. We get into that. But then you've got to look right away. We have agreements with Taiwan to defend them.
Absolutely, we do. Yeah, and you know, this Chinese communist leader, behind that smiling exterior in his tailor-made suit, he is the most aggressive communist Chinese leader they've had since 1949 when they took over the mainland. Chairman Mao, basically his attitude was, we want to live in our own little world, leave us alone. They were not aggressive and not much engagement with the world. Xi Jinping was suspicious of engagement with the world, but still modest gains, you know, towards a somewhat capitalistic society. When we get to the present Chinese leader, President Xi, he is aggressive. He wants to make China the only superpower in the world. He wants to surpass the United States in military, intel, and cyber capabilities, and he's well on the way to doing that. And the idea that we're not going to contain them but peacefully coexist is a naive proposition.
One of the reasons why they're on that path is because they've got massive investment coming in from Silicon Valley. You know, the chips, we talk about these chips that basically they power your phone, cars, so much technology, nuclear technology, and you've got Silicon Valley. Their Chinese affiliates are investing billions into that economy. So more money coming in as they harden up their stance as the Communist Party, as Wes was just talking about, and as they try to move forward without taking, you know, any responsibility for the virus that was let loose on the world. Remember, we've got our matching challenge at ACLJ.org. Double the impact of your donation today. That's ACLJ.org. We'll be right back.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Too secular. We talked about Jake Sullivan this week. I want you to listen to him, the National Security Advisor to President Biden, about China. That's what he was talking about here. Take a listen by 15.
The goal here is not containment. It's not a new Cold War. It is rather a favorable disposition of how the United States and its allies and partners can shape the international rules of the road on the sorts of issues that are fundamentally going to matter for the people in our country and the people everywhere.
There are a lot of words there, Harry. What I hear is that we're not going to confront China. We are done, at least with this administration, this idea of trying to contain their power, their spread around the world, the work that they're doing, the business they're doing, the ports that they're building, et cetera. And also giving up on the human rights issues too. I mean, this is I never want to let people forget. Harry, this is a country. Yes, it's got an economy which has dynamically impacts ours, and we can't you can't shy away from that. Any administration would have to deal with that. But the human rights abuses, the fact that there's an ongoing genocide inside this country, and the statement from our national security advisor is, well, we don't want to contain them. I mean, to me, Harry, that alone, it's just, you are playing with a very powerful, dangerous force. And he talks about these rules of the road. They love international rule norms, but China doesn't follow any of those. They'll go into a country in Africa, strip mine it, pay off a couple of dictators, and leave when they're done.
You are absolutely correct. So the United States policy with respect to China is grounded essentially in one goal only. And that is surrender, surrendering U.S. sovereignty, surrendering our concern for human rights violations. And what do we get in exchange? Perhaps an incredibly weak climate change deal, wherein the Chinese government will continue to flaunt those rules, will continue to increase its footprint in genocide, and we will stand by and engage in something that the Biden administration is intimately familiar with. That is self-congratulations instead of clear policy analysis. So I think at the end of the day, what Jake Sullivan has done, what John Kerry has done, essentially is allowed the Chinese government to basically advance its agenda, we have engaged in nothing less than craven cowardice. We refuse to confront China, and this opens the door, what, to Chinese aggression potentially in Taiwan and the rest of the international space, and we achieve virtually nothing, but we perhaps feel better about ourselves.
You know, Than, what I get nervous about always with China, especially with, and unfortunately it's just clear, with the Democrat Party specifically, is that there's so many ties from the Biden family. We see members of Congress with these ties to China. And so when you're economically get so dependent, it's not just U.S. businesses, but there's U.S. politicians as well. The pressure campaign, we look the other way on atrocities. We look the other way on their expansion of their military. And we try to instead celebrate some bogus climate agreement that we've done, like a kind of like a nuclear deal with Iran, but even maybe even more ridiculous when it comes to China, because it's got no real specifics, and they just say they'll try. And that's like something we celebrate in Washington right now, which is, it's just very backwards.
Yeah, Jordan, and I think the prime example of that is actually Jake Sullivan. I mean, we talked at length yesterday of how he's not the right guy to negotiate with Iran. Well, clearly he's not the right guy to negotiate with China either. I mean, he's acting, first of all, like we can trust China. I completely agree with your point, Jordan, that China is it's a reality, that they're a power that we have to deal with. But when it comes down to whether or not we can trust them, that should be an open and shut case that we can't. If you look at who China is, especially in news of this dictator for life news that came out about Xi today, Jordan, they're not free. Of course, they're not democratic. We know that. That's not a newsflash. They're not open. They're not a partner. And most importantly, Jordan, they're not trustworthy. So you have to engage these negotiations realizing that they are going to try to take advantage of you. Now, when you talk about why investment is flowing to the Chinese, of course, there's a security component, especially when it comes to the semiconductor chips, Jordan. But we also have to look at, why is the investment flowing out of our country? It's because we've made it not attractive for those businesses to invest in those industries here in the United States. You've got to bring down the regulation. You've got to bring down the taxes. You've got to incentivize those companies to do business in the United States. Jordan, if I look at all of those components together, Jake Sullivan is probably the last guy you would pick to lead those negotiations. And yet here we are.
I want to play this sound and go to you, Wes, because this is President Biden when he spoke at this climate summit, on the difference between where we are with China right now for intentional versus like unintentional conflict. Just take a listen.
I'm not looking for, I don't anticipate there will be a need for there be physical conflict. But, you know, as you've heard me say this before, my dad had an expression. He said the only conflict worse than one that's intended is one that's unintended, one that's unintended. And so in my meetings with him virtually coming up, and we haven't set the exact date yet, I want to make sure there's no misunderstanding. It's competition, not conflict.
You know, I get, one, no one's trying to rush into a world war with China. That being said, they've pushed the envelope about as far as you can. They genocide against your own people, virus unleashed on the world without apology. Right. By the way, it's not even like they try to say, we did this, we messed up, it's our fault, and we feel horrible, try to pay and try to build a fund or something. No, it's the opposite. They push. And so this idea of competition versus conflict, to me, it feels a lot more like some kind of conflict. It may not be the traditional sense of what we think of war,
right.
But when they say like it's not a Cold War, I have a feeling from the Chinese perspective, they would take an honest opinion would be very different.
Yeah, the recent Prime Minister Abbott of Australia made the statement just last week that he really, truly, and he's the former Prime Minister of Australia, which is in the Indo-Pacific region, that he expects China to invade Taiwan sooner rather than later. And so whenever we say we're not going to contain them and that we expect them to abide by the rules of the road, which is what President Biden said, do you really expect them to do that? Because they haven't done it thus far. And the key issues with the U.S. and China include Hong Kong, where they're violating all the democracy agreements, the military buildup in the South China Sea, and they are really, really aggressive there. Of course, the pandemic, trade, the potential invasion of Taiwan. And while all of this is going on, they are increasing their military exponentially. They now have the largest Navy in the world. They've surpassed the United States Navy. And they don't have as much sophisticated technology as we do, but they're close. And they're intent on having the largest military in the world. Right now we do. And so I think it's foolish in light of all of these issues, South China Sea, Taiwan, Hong Kong, military buildup, to say that it is not our goal to contain China. You know, they are an adversary, and it should be our goal to contain them and to counter them, but they're not willing to do that. The goal here, Jake Sullivan said, is not containment, you know, not a new Cold War. When you tell someone like President Xi and China that we don't intend to contain you, just one example of the ramifications of that, it is like giving them written permission to invade Taiwan, because they do want to take that country back. They're willing to do it by force. And to say we will not contain you is like giving them permission. What a foolish statement for a national security advisor to make. Even if he thought it, he shouldn't have said it.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is, Than, I just get this feeling like whatever administration in the future who's going to have to deal with this, and the Biden administration doesn't appear that they want to. They're just looking the other way, and they're celebrating the climate stuff and not dealing with the real threats, like Wes is just going through threat by threat by threat by threat. The longer that goes, the harder it is to come back and start containment and start pushing back on what you are allowing to be established in by China, not just in their region of the world. That's certainly a problem, but internationally. They've got the whole world dependent on them for cars, for goods, for anything that operates electronically.
Well, Jordan, you've got to deal with reality, right? And I'll tell you what the reality is in China. They absolutely see this as a competition. They would call it an economic conflict. I have no doubt about it. In Jordan, it's one they intend to win, and they're willing to do a lot of things to win it. And one of those ways that they're willing to do is they're willing to cheat, Jordan. They're willing to engage in IP theft and all the rest. We have to deal with that reality and be willing to combat that theft. We also have to get more competitive, Jordan. We've got to create an economic structure where the Silicon Valley companies don't even want to go over to China. Now, look, they should be restricted from national security purposes, but they also ought to be taxed in a way that they want to do that development here in the United States. I think this administration is failing on both of those points right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the issues. The reason people go there is it's cheap, and John Kerry has been asked about it, you know, forced labor. When you have forced labor, it's, you know, you can make the chip a lot cheaper, but it's also when you allow U.S. investment that goes towards that labor. You know, they're trying to do what's best for an economic cost and to consumers, too. So you're not investing in the U.S. and you're not investing or giving tax incentives in the U.S. You're trying to raise corporate taxes in the U.S. like they are right now. We come back. Rick Rennell joining us live from Serbia. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Secular, we are taking your phone calls to 1-800-684-3110, but I want to go right to Rick Rennell, our senior advisor for foreign policy and national security. Rick is joining us today from Serbia. Earlier in the week, Albania this week, Serbia. So Rick, right off the bat, we've talked about it before, but just to remind people what you are doing right now, and you've crossed in Albania now in Serbia between and the work that you're doing to assist those two countries.
Well, look, I am no longer in government. I am now a private citizen, and I will tell you that what I'm trying to do is do the private sector side of what I did inside the government, and that is trying to bring economic development to the Balkans, trying to do what President Trump did, which was reject politics and try to get economic development going. Now, the good news, Jordan, is that in theory, Joe Biden has kept the same Donald Trump policy of economic development in the Balkans. And so we're happy to hear that. But it's very true that we need more leadership in the Balkans. I don't think that the Biden administration is concentrating on this area enough. We have these four economic development agreements, very good agreements that Donald Trump negotiated and got the parties to agree to. And now we're in the implementation phase. So I'm over here from a private citizen, private sector side, trying to help bring development to a region that has experienced lots of hostilities over the last 20 years, and it's time that the people move on, everyone look forward, and try to bring some stability to the Balkans through economic development.
Yeah, I mean, Rick, what I noticed in one of the articles about your visit there, I think it came out of the press there, but it was translated into English, was when you crossed the border from Albania to Serbia, you did a kind of impromptu press conference. So you talked about that all these the flights were set up, the economic ability, but that there wasn't enough movement there. Is that where you feel like the Biden administration dropped the ball? Is it it kind of feels like the way with a lot of these agreements, whether it's the Abraham Accords, whether it's the Balkans, it's right on the line, but then you've got to actually go to that implementation phase, like you talked about, Rick, and that when we're talking about no longer containing China, like Jake Sullivan said, but celebrating climate accords with them instead of economic and business and trying to change. Is that the issue, though, the implementation?
Yeah, I think exactly right. And the analogy that you made with the Abraham Accords, I think, is the perfect one. Look, we all know that these are really big issues, and they're not just going to be solved when a president like Donald Trump gets agreement from both sides. It's going to take years. Multiple years, multiple presidents. And what we need is sustained leadership that says, okay, we got you to the table. We got you to agree to economic development, like the first ever flight between Pristina, Kosovo, and Belgrade, Serbia. And then opening up the border, having economic development through normalized commerce, like cargo and car shipments going back and forth. That hasn't been the case in the past, and since negotiated by Trump, we really don't have an administration that is concentrating on implementation, as you say. And so there's a lot of talk, but there's not a lot of action. And I think what Donald Trump gave us was cutting through the talk and getting to the action.
Yeah, I mean, these economic relationships can change everything, but they have to kind of exist. I want to shift gear. Well, a final question, because you're there. For our audience who says, they likely remember the conflict and the how much conflict there's been in that region, some of the, just as you said, the things that people need to be able to move on, especially young people. And another point you made was that, instead of feeling like they need to immigrate other places to work, that they could find jobs there. But for an American listening to this radio broadcast, why is that work important for the United States?
Look, we're watching in Eastern Europe a real terrible migrant crisis, right? We see the Belarus and Polish border. We see tensions rising in Ukraine with Russian troops built up. We see Russia being really belligerent with energy and leverage against Europe. All of this can cause a lot of stability to our economy through the global markets. And so what we need is we need to be able to solve problems and do economic development before it gets to a crisis. I believe that getting economic development in the Balkans, getting young people to stay in Kosovo, Serbia, Albania, instead of abandoning their country because there are no jobs and moving somewhere else, I believe that we have to be able to do more in their country so that they can stay and have a great life. One thing I learned, Jordan, at the UN for 8 years is that most people want to stay in their country where they grew up, where they were born, where they speak the language, and where they know people. They don't want to move away. What the reason many people move away is because they're looking for a better life. And so if we can help do economic development, I think it's going to save American effort down the road. I think it's going to save American tax dollars, and it's certainly going to help people who want to stay in their own country.
You mentioned Russia as well and the aggression there, the migrant crisis. I mean, you got Poland is talking about building their own wall with Belarus and Lukashenko there, one of the longest serving Soviet style dictators. But the Russian aggression too, that threat there, it seems like we're right on the edge of both Russia and then another part of the world in China. They are taking those steps yet again, like we've seen them before in Russia, where it looks like they're going back into Ukraine.
Yeah. Well, what is the common denominator between what Russia did in grabbing Crimea and what Russia is doing right now? The common denominator is Joe Biden. I hate to say it, but it's true. And the Obama-Biden administration allowed Crimea to be taken. And let's be really clear, that was rewriting of European borders. Now, Chancellor Merkel hates that. She doesn't want to see any borders rewritten inside Europe. And yet that was allowed to happen under Barack Obama and Joe Biden. And now what we see is tensions that are heading in that same direction. The fact of the matter is that during Donald Trump's time, that's not what was happening. People saw that Donald Trump had a very credible threat of military action and a very serious foreign policy. Now that's not the case. The Biden team is so weak that they're encouraging people to make moves.
Well, Rick, I appreciate what you're doing, continuing what you can do now that you're outside the government, but you can still utilize your role, your profile, to help this region of the world. And I'm glad we're able to continue to educate our audience and educate all of us, too, as a part of the ACLJ team on those issues. We've got our offices in Europe and got to talk to you offline, actually, because when you were on our show on Monday, it did make some news in Albania, and we were contacted by some pretty high-profile folks. So we'll talk about that offline, but it may have something to talk about with people, too. So, Rick, as always, I appreciate you joining us from Serbia Live to talk today. Thank you, Rick, as always, for all of the work that you're doing. Folks, when we come back on the broadcast, second half hour coming up, we'll take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. And remember, it's our matching challenge month of November. Very important. If you can donate to the ACLJ, and you're financially able to now, this is a great time to do it at aclj.org. That's aclj.org. We'll be right back.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
keeping you informed and engaged. Now more than ever, this is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
In breaking news, it ties exactly what we started the broadcast with China and this kind of foreign policy focus. And I love being able to do this because I'm learning. Well, I hope you're learning live on the broadcast. You know, to obviously growing up, the conflict that was going on in the Balkans where Rick now, it was big news, and it was, you know, there was horrible imagery out of, and we saw the International Criminal Court and Slobodan Milosevic and the special prosecutions, all of the war crimes there. But we saw those conflicts, unfortunately, between like ethnic Christians, ethnic Muslims, and kind of a precursor to when we were dealing with this extreme Islamic terrorism. But it wasn't really about that. And so to learn about these issues, to take them all in, and then to take the big picture issues that we see all the time, like a China who makes news in the U.S. every day for good reason. So we have breaking news now. President Biden is actually going to hold a virtual summit with the Chinese president on Monday. They've only spoken twice since President Biden took office. This is the first time they're going to be at least kind of face-to-face. So put this all into, I guess, that will happen on Monday. The question I have is, when you have these human rights abuses continuing, and you know it continues, how is President Biden, going to take the same position like John Kerry did? Take a listen, bite three.
How in the several months of meetings behind the scenes with China, did you bring up some of those very contentious issues, such as the use of forced labor in Xinjiang for building solar panels? How did you address it, and how did you kind of overcome that in reaching this final?
Well, we're honest. We're honest about the differences, and we certainly know what they are, and we've articulated them. But that's not my lane here. That's my job is to be the climate guy.
You know, here's the thing. John Kerry might be able to make this kind of claim. Now, I don't think he was, like Rick said, one of the issues is that we saw with Russian aggression is one common denominator is that Joe Biden was in office as an executive branch vice president, now president. Wes, when I hear that, now that we know they're going to have this conference, the president can't make that claim. He doesn't have a lane. Every lane is his lane. And these abuses, it would just we don't know yet what the public-private component of this yet and how the readouts that we'll get. But these are those moments you've got to seize as President of the United States.
Absolutely. And as a spokesperson, a major spokesperson, according to himself, for the Biden administration, I think human rights is in everybody's lane. You can't just dismiss it that way. But him saying that reminds me of something. On the same day that John Kerry made that statement, Admiral John Kirby, who's the Pentagon press secretary, was asked in the Pentagon press briefing room, which is the greater threat, climate change or China? To which he responded, well, they are both major threats. And by his response to that, he's equating climate change as being on equal footing as a threat to the peace of the world and to the United States as climate change itself. And so it's not a surprise when the Pentagon makes a statement like that, that John Kerry is going to say, well, human rights, they're not in my lane. They are in his lane.
No, absolutely. I mean, Thad, on the Hill side, I mean, listen, we have a Congress that's still trying to kind of hold accountable the administration very much so for what happened with Afghanistan. I would imagine that our friends on the Hill, with what they're seeing with China and now Monday, knowing that there's going to be this meeting to see the speeches about the climate change, but John Kerry punting on genocide. I would imagine that they want to do what they can. I know that right now, if they're in the minority, there's only so much they can do, but what's that kind of temperature there on this issue
of
China?
Well, I think they'd want to engage on two levels. The first one Wes touched on, look, human rights, forced genocide, forced sterilization. Jordan, that is everybody's lane. And a true leader makes sure that everybody in his cabinet, everybody that speaks for him says as much. The other thing is something that you mentioned earlier, Jordan, when they're engaging in forced labor, in slave labor, that has a direct impact on the U.S. economy. That has to be in John Kerry's lane.
Yeah, I mean, this is, again, folks, we're going to continue to break this down. We're going to take your calls. So we'll start off with Charlie. We come back from this break. If you want to talk to us on air about China, about what's going on with their aggression, the Russian aggression in Europe as well, we're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. And the Biden administration just say, well, we've got a kind of a climate agreement with China. Is everybody happy about that? Be right back.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
All right, welcome back to Secular. Just so you know how China is positioning themselves, they've said that the country will be focusing on, quote, positive competition in the meeting on Monday rather than confrontation. This is because they don't want to be confronted. What I've learned at the UN, and you know, and Rick talks about that, you can learn a lot. He spent more time there than I have in his official capacity. But I spent a lot of time there too. And what you learn is these countries like China, who have this kind of international power and influence, what they can't stand is that when you're at a microphone and they have to listen to the horrible things that they are doing, that they're responsible for. Because when they're an ambassador for their country, they are responsible. They've decided to take a role in that government, to promote that government, to defend that government. And when China says positive, again, competition, Harry, instead of and that's what they want. A true leader would say, yeah, that's what China wants. What they're going to get is real confrontation. We're going to confront them on the internet, their human rights abuses at home. We're going to confront them on their aggression in South China Sea and with Taiwan. Not just, we're just two companies working. That's how they want us to see it. Like, they're the company of China and we're the company of the United States.
I think your analysis is spot on. I think, to be clear, the Chinese government basically fears public confrontation, and they also fear a confrontation by a superpower that is backed by the will to engage in action. And I think what the Biden administration has done is that the Biden administration has essentially opened the door to additional Chinese aggression, to additional Chinese genocide. Why? Because they are afraid, if you will, of confronting China. Because if you confront China, you have to be willing to use U.S. resources to advance our interests. So the Biden administration, I think, has a deliberate policy of not confronting open and obvious issues. So, for instance, if you look at John Kerry's performance, it is abhorrent. So he's on an international stage and he's pushing for climate change, and yet he is prepared to ignore human rights abuses, which look him directly in the face. And then he says, oh, someone else can handle that. This is weakness on steroids.
Yeah, I mean, at the same time, you know, we have our Secretary of State right now. He's talking about our ironclad commitment to Ukrainian security. If you're Ukrainian, you know what that was good for under the same actors. I mean, you take President Obama out, and the same people are in this administration. You elevated the vice president to president. You beat Jake Sullivan. They're all there. And why on earth would those Ukrainians feel like they could that means anything while the Russians are parachuting in?
Oh, absolutely. No, there's no reassurance there at all. Remember, in the Obama-Biden administration, when Ukraine was fighting literally for their survival as a nation, President Obama would not even send them offensive weapons. He sent them MREs and tents and supplies like that. He would not sell them weapons to defend themselves. One of the first things President Trump did when he came into office, he said, we're going to sell them weapons, offensive weapons, so they can defend their sovereignty as a nation. I think all of that is changing again. You look at China expanding their military power. They're expanding their nuclear arsenal, by the way. We just discovered there are 400 new ICBM silos being constructed in China. Of course, the cyber and intel. You look at Russia amassing troops again in huge numbers along the Ukrainian border. Also, Iran is very close to having a nuclear weapon. The breakout time, unless we do something, is down to a few months. All of these events and developments are connected to Biden's low polls in the United States, because our adversaries look at the polls too, and the perception that he is a weak leader. And so our adversaries think they can get by with things because our leader is weak, and he continues to project weakness. President Xi, to his credit, at least is clear. He has a China first policy. I wish to God that we could have a president who has an America first policy for us, because that is normal. Leaders should defend the interest of their own countries.
Let me go to the phones. Charlie in Texas. Hey, Charlie, welcome to Secular. You're on the air.
I just wanted to agree with you in the fact that Joe Biden is allowing China to basically advance to take over the world, just like he did by allowing all the immigrants to just come across the border and completely invade us and put us in nothing but a a quandary of problems.
I think that, Charlie, you point out something here, that John Kerry got asked this question specifically about what was going on in China. And I think this sheds a lot of light into how they're thinking about these issues, Charlie. Let's listen to him in his own words. The reporter asked a great question, and then you'll hear John Kerry bite for it.
Another issue related to China is importing of solar panels, because clearly a priority of the Biden administration is really addressing climate. But it's not the only priority. There are other things as well, such as the Uyghur situation in the West. What is the process by which one trades off climate against human rights?
Well, life is always full of tough choices in the relationship between nations.
I mean, let me go. Than, you talked about that climate justice, they love to claim, is a human right. I mean, they're teaching young people all the time, this is the human right abuse of you that the world is doing because the leaders aren't doing enough. But then we have these actual examples of just the human rights abuses we've defined internationally. We've defined genocide. We've defined these terms so that they can be prosecuted, so that the world stops them, so that we don't just look the other way. We don't, just make tough choices. It's not one or the other.
Jordan, this is so offensive. And by the way, this is exactly why China knows they will not get called out by this administration when it comes to human rights, because you'll get a response like this where John Kerry just says, you know, I'm just the climate guy. Well, I'm sorry. If you're going to go out to the rest of the world and say that climate justice is a fundamental human right and look for treaties based on the fact that it's a fundamental human right, then Jordan, I'm going to expect you as the climate guy, as the human rights guy, to also advocate for the rights that are clearly listed out in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. By the way, one of the primary human rights is the right to not be a victim of genocide. Jordan, the situation with the Uyghurs meets all of the hallmarks of what a genocide is. It is most specifically the forced sterilization. That is the attempted extermination of a people group. That is why the Trump administration, as they left, declared that a genocide situation. So, Jordan, you know, he wants to just dismiss this as, say, I'm just a climate guy. You can't say I'm just the climate guy, and climate justice is is a human right, and we're going to turn our head and we can't walk and chew gum and also point out the other fundamental human rights. I'll say this too, Jordan. When President Biden sits down with President Xi, if this is not a topic that comes up to his face, that will be a waste of breath and a waste of time.
I mean, the whole world is calling this out. Even this administration, Harry, has acknowledged. So we were questioned that is whether or not the State Department would continue, you know, the shift from Secretary Pompeo, part of our team, to Secretary Blinken, was the question, would they consider this, would they still believe that what was going on in China met the definition of genocide as laid out in international law, so that, again, it really it okays the world to do something, but you can't force actors to do anything. We're seeing the Holocaust Museum, they're reinforcing, there's 1 to 3 million people are subject to forced sterilization right now in the Muslim community in China, torture, forced labor, which Secretary Kerry just shrugged his shoulders. He didn't say, I don't think that's not, he knows what that is. He knows it's true. He knows that they're not denying. They acknowledge the genocide. They acknowledge the sterilization. They acknowledge the forced labor, but it's like they've got their new idea of what human rights are. And those are tradable for climate.
Absolutely. So many of the climate change proponents assert that climate change involves something called climate racism. And therefore, that is a violation of human rights. But when confronted with actual specific evidence of a violation of human rights that meets the definition of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the United States exhibits a policy proposal of unwillingness to confront what is right in front of their eyes. So their lack of willingness to confront is essentially grounded in a secondary consideration. Their lack of willingness to impose consequences on human rights violators. And I think that message has been received loud and clear in China. And so right now, I think the Chinese government is prepared to continue to advance eugenics, prepared to continue to advance genocide, continue to advance human rights abuses, and the Biden administration is prepared to say one thing only: we are unprepared to confront. We just seek a positive competition.
We got a final segment coming up, so I encourage you to share it with your friends and family. If you got questions, comments, get them in on social media or give us a call at 1-800-684-3110. I encourage you to support the ACLJ's matching challenge this month of November. Double the impact of your donation at aclj.org.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
You know, he's 68 years old. He is now he's been enshrined as an undisputed ruler, leader in China. We're talking about Xi Jinping. When President Biden, for the first time, has a virtual face-to-face, but it's the first time they've done anything like this. They've only had two phone calls since President Biden has been in office. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's been more work, but with others, and you know, they're talking about these issues. But you'd think with COVID, with just COVID, let's just step there for a moment. There'd been more than two phone calls. To me, I mean, that also sends a message then in the political world. If you're not getting these leaders on the phone more regularly, when you've dealt with and you've had reasons to do so, and to continue to follow up, this is why they love the fact that all the language that our U.S. government's using, we're using their language. We're doing the opposite of how we used to approach China, which is through calling them out, through strategic, diplomatic and economic confrontation, not just competition.
Yeah, Jordan, to me, it comes back to the word we started the broadcast with, and it's trust. I mean, can you trust China after the COVID pandemic, after it was unleashed on the world, after all of the evidence, Jordan, shows at a bare minimum, they did nothing to contain it and, in fact, let it be released on the rest of the world without trying to stop it. Clearly, they can't be trusted unless you can build that trust back up. How are you going to do that? I definitely concede that it involves engaging them. Like you said, I think any administration would need to engage the power that is China. But Jordan, you have to do it from a standpoint of trying to build the trust back and starting by recognizing that you can't currently trust them. In order to be able to compete with them economically, you're going to have to be able to bring some of that business back to the United States. And in order to do that, you're going to have to stop their cheating. Plain and simple, Jordan. You can't trust them. And that's where those conversations have to start.
Well, so to start on the military side, we're going to hear on the economic side. On the military side, we see their advancements. It was interesting. There was during the break, for the people watching online, they saw some of these commentators who were experts in China. They were talking about how, you know, Mao tried to do a lot of this, but didn't have the military, didn't have the internet, didn't have the resources. That has changed. China is now a nuclear superpower. They are a space power. They are a military power, especially when it comes to the Navy, so that they're not just stuck in their region or in land, but they can really stir up trouble wherever they like now, if they so choose. And so it's, you know, we've talked about our show, the drills they've used about mapping out a U.S. aircraft carrier and a bombing. It feels to me that they're sending that signal that you try and go and defend Taiwan, we are preparing for war.
Yeah, their military buildup is very stunning. As a matter of fact, the Pentagon just last week issued their Chinese military power report, and in it they sound the alarm that China is testing this hypersonic missile that is nuclear capable. They're increasing the Navy, their cyber and intel technology, advances in cyberspace, and all of that. General John Hyten, who is the vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff for the United States, said the pace at which China is moving is absolutely stunning. At the current pace, he said, Beijing will surpass Russia and the United States in overall military power in the next few years. That should be alarming, because the thing about China, they're not only building a huge military and a huge military arsenal, but China has the political will to be aggressive and to be very aggressive about defending their own interest. And I don't really think that the military power is something that, you know, China's going to be a direct threat to the United States. They're going to attack us. I don't see that in the cards. They would know better, and we would decimate them. What they're doing, they're using their military buildup and all of this power, especially in the Indo-Pacific region, so that when they do something that is illegal, think invading Taiwan, that we will not be able to respond effectively. They're not going to attack us. What they want is for us not to be able to respond to their aggression, whether it's in economics and trade or in the military and grabbing land in the South China Sea or in Taiwan. So that's the purpose of this strong military, to limit our reactions to them and for them to be able to bully the West and to hang that threat over us. And they are aggressively pursuing that strategy.
I want you to listen to President Biden. I'm going to go to Harry on this, because he talked about, again, his approach leading into now the summit that he mentions in this bio, and now we know it's going to be on Monday between our president and the Chinese president. Take a listen.
As I've said, I look at China, and I've had hours of conversations with Xi Jinping, both in person when I was vice president and since I've been president, at least 5 or 6 hours worth of conversations on the telephone. And I'm going to be having a virtual summit with him. I've made it clear, this is competition. It does not have to be conflict. There is no reason there need be conflict.
Now, Harry, I mean, if he's right about the hours this time around, not as vice president, as president, those would be very long phone calls, I guess 3 or 4 hours each, the two that we have been reported on. But it just feels like, me, this is what China should feel like, not what the U.S. should not be going in there going, I'm telling, we don't want conflict. We can just be competitors, and we're, you know, competitors just like a business. And but I would feel like as Wes just said, they still know we could decimate them, but yet we are taking the approach, we're going to them, and like, it's like the bowing down or the please, we don't want any conflict with you, like we're afraid.
Absolutely. So basically, we have decided to engage in competition with China without the willingness to impose consequences. So keep in mind, the United States has a sanctions regime against Iran, for instance. And guess who is violating those, I shouldn't say sanctions agreement, they've agreed to sanction Iran. Who is violating those sanctions? China. China has ramped up its imports of Iranian oil at lower than market prices. This hands a huge economic advantage to China. In addition, the Biden administration is refusing to confront China economically. And so basically, they're allowing many of our industries to be decimated by Chinese competition. Under the Trump administration was prepared to confront China. Why? They wanted to put American interests, including economic interests, first. And so I think at the end of the day, the Biden administration is simply exhibiting one thing and one thing only. The 2020 election was a victory for China.
Yeah, I mean, this idea, Than, we know things can be turned around. My final just concern with all of this is that we let them go too far, and it's just that much more difficult. I've said it before. I'm going to keep saying it with China. It becomes that much more difficult in the future to ever get them back on track and push back against this expansion.
Yeah, I mean, Jordan, China is dead set on being the world's next superpower. And left alone, Jordan, they have the means to do it. Now, we, the United States, can stop them. But what do we have to do to stop them? Jordan, we've got to have the will to stop them. That's what I'm not seeing right now, the will to stop them.
Yeah, it's absolutely right. I mean, you know, we're saying we don't want to be, you know, contentious. We just want to be competitors. And you know what? Competitors in the U.S., you know, they have to follow rules. And in Europe, they follow rules. China doesn't follow rules. They steal your technology. They resell it cheap. They force people into labor. They don't pay wages or minimum wage and have labor unions and issues like that. So it's not a competition when it's not fair, when there's no rules. That is more like war. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.